turning the pages. I received a call one morning from my friend Mark. His voice was shaking and tearful. Mark had been out of work for months, and the arduous and occasional interview had left him bitter and incredibly isolated. On this morning, an interview awaited, one Mark had hoped for. It was clear this morning, however, that the tension had been too much. The tears and the shaking in his voice was no longer from the sorrow of being unemployed, but the diminished sense of dignity of having to participate in the potentially dehumanizing interview process all over again. He couldn't bring himself to go. How do you come back to life from seeming death? How do you return to life when the idea of living sounds worse than the idea of dying? One way we come back to life is to return life to ourselves from whatever we've given it to. Return approval back to yourself from a person you've given the need for approval. Return the need for love back to yourself from a circumstance where you didn't receive it. Return dignity to yourself from anyone who may have oppressed you. Living our truest story in accord with our spiritual narrative is, at its core, finding the will to live and to love within ourselves, however small it may seem, and to live from that. Essential to storytelling is the turn. Just when it looks like the hero has failed, something happens. It appears in the form of what Joseph Campbell called supernatural help. It is support that comes via the hero's faith and willingness to move forward. At the moment of failure, a friend comes in to save the day. A mysterious stranger appears. The answer to the riddle suddenly surfaces. An understanding is reached. Whatever the turn looks like, it adds strength and second life to the hero. Countless action movies come to mind when the hero's pain from injuries fade, and the hero returns to being someone you don't want to mess with. Is the turn true in everyday life? Perhaps it's not always as dramatic, but it may just as much be based upon faith and willingness. It may not be as big as almost hitting bottom and being lifted up, but it might be as simple as realizing that there is another page to turn, the realization that one page is not all there is. Freedom isn't about writing the pages of our true story, it's being able to turn them. For Mark, it wasn't some words of support or an epiphany that got him healthy and working again. Things didn't get better. They got worse. He was admitted to the hospital. His drinking got out of control. His mother, whom he had to move back in with, passed away. What he had to discover was a deeper will to live within himself. No matter how small this will to live is, our ability to have even the slightest awareness of what is truly sacred, even real, and to live from that allows us to walk through anything. Mark got sober and moved into a sober living house. He got a job. It didn't work. He got another job, and it didn't work. Then he got a job he didn't like, but it worked for his healing and rebuilding. Today, dignity is a characteristic of Mark again. The turn takes place in our life when we change ourselves in a situation. We no longer become its effect, but become a cause for something new. Making ourselves available for the deeper story to be told transforms our character in our life. Our life story is either a process of remembering or a process of forgetting. Like a spiral, we are either moving further away from the center or back to it. No matter how close or how far we are from it, however, the center is always there. When the moment of clarity comes where we realize that this is not who I really am, or that this is me, we feel informed by the center of who we are. I rarely end up where I was intending to go, but often I end up somewhere I needed to be, Douglas Adams said in his Long Dark Tea Time for the Soul. If you want to turn the page on your story, there is no better way than to commit yourself to the present. Know that what you are doing now is important. If you're bored, get out of the house. You won't be starting a new story. You will be coming across narratives that have been going on forever. Conversations, people helping people, romance, poverty. It's all out there. Yet your narrative is still unique. No one has ever before experienced these things as you. If we stop trying to tell ourselves a story that isn't our own, we can then step into one that's truer to our deepest selves. I regularly give thanks for the whole of my life. That does not mean that I'm thankful for everything in my life. There is much to not be grateful for. Giving thanks for my whole life is different. It is a reminder that although I may confront negative instances, individuals, and circumstances, I can use them for the positive purpose of remembering the truth of who I am. This will not be for the process of my forgetting, I tell myself, before my remembering. Imagine that throughout your whole life you've kept two journals. In one, you record things as they happened. In the other, you jot down events as you would like them to have happened. Can you think of the things you would change? I can. I often hear someone say they have no regrets, but I am not one of them. Ray Davies, lead singer of the Kinks, was once asked in an interview if he would change anything about his life. "Every little thing," he answered. "I'd start with all those strikeouts and dropped balls in Little League. My unsuccessful bid for student council would have been successful. I'd ask Kelly out on a date, and Nicole, and Brianna. And to those girls I did take out, I'd try to be an even better date." Your first journal is filled with things as they actually happened. It's up to date and as you experienced it. Your second journal includes things as you would have liked them to have happened. It is in process. Question: at what point do you start wanting to rewrite the second journal? At some point, you may actually come to the point where you prefer things as they've happened over how you would have liked them to, regrets and all. It sounds crazy that even when we would change things, the value of what actually happened in our life may be something we wouldn't want to give up for the world. Perhaps the biggest change we want to make in our story is one we can still make. It is a change in emphasis. Watching a Little League game, I was filled with memories of my youth. I noticed something interesting. What I remembered more than anything about my baseball years were my errors and my big victories. I remember being the last out or getting the big hit and, unfortunately, not too much in between. This saddened me. I wish I recalled less about that and more about the names of the kids I played with, the way the sun felt on my face, the shapes and expressions of my coaches' faces. Looking at my life in that moment, I realized I was doing the same thing. I was emphasizing the mistakes and the successes. My mind was wrapped up in the trivial and the goal lists, missing out on the real life before me. In truth, I wish I was better at remembering the people I love, the moments of leisure, and the beauty of my everyday life. As I began to reflect on that more, all of a sudden the name of a teammate came back to me. The true story didn't change, but I began to let myself see, feel, and understand it better. What once was lost was restored, and my life in the present became enhanced. Life is about the middle, that time that whooshes by because we were making other plans. And the best thing we can do is to embrace our wholeness, that which is right in our life, not just memories, but the essence of life itself. We don't live to find it. We don't live to create it. We just live it. Our commitment should never be to what the path must look like, but to the path itself. Have you ever heard the term, trust the process? What does that mean? Have faith? Yes. Believe that the process involves principles and ideas that cannot fail, like true love, justice, the greater good, and the human spirit? Yes. More than anything, though, I think trust the process means don't mess with the process, throwing it off. This means to prepare for the best and get out of the way so as to give yourself a better opportunity to avoid the worst. In Jennifer Goodman's The Taoist Steve, the main character Dex shares three rules for getting a woman. First, one must be desireless. Secondly, one must do something excellent in her presence. Thirdly, and most importantly, be gone. In other words, trust the process. If it doesn't happen, it just isn't supposed to. When you are living at one with your spiritual narrative, it's all you really need to trust in. Just don't get in its way. Sometimes this means not trusting a circumstance or even a person, but the process. This is not to say that people should not be trusted, but when they let us down as they often can, let us remember that the greater plot is unseen in those moments. Trust can also be a great burden to place on someone, or to hold ourselves to. Whenever I trust the process, things not only work out more easily, but also for the better. In order for our spiritual narrative to reveal itself, it does have to arise from the genuine intention of living at one with our soul's theme. If I'm working with someone who claims she wants a loving, harmonious relationship and she is still with the dope and insists I'm trusting the process, there's a problem. Trusting your spiritual narrative means believing that love is the central theme of your life. It means that you believe in divine powers conspiring for your greater good. It means that you believe your life means something. In a classic cliffhanger, the hero is at an end. What is before them seems inescapable or insurmountable, but, as we all know, this is not the whole story. The same is true for us. When we face seemingly insurmountable odds, we know intuitively that this is not the whole story. We are simply stuck on a page of our own book. We can look at where we feel incomplete and stay there, accepting it as our conclusion. We can work on trying to express all our discontent, reliving negative experiences over and over again. But there is a better option. Turn the page. Some of us have been living on the same page for years, maybe even decades. For the person who lives on the same page, turning the pages of one's life isn't easy. It means letting go. It means having faith in a new chapter. Most importantly, it involves a willingness to take on the whole of one's life's theme. It means answering the question, what is my life really about, and applying it. Remembering the truth of who she is how the hero earns her title. It takes courage, it takes trust, and the seeming divine support that comes in knowing the whole story. Courage doesn't free us from our fear. Courage affirms what we know to be most true. Turning a page we have been stuck on for so long may be frightening, as the next page represents the unknown. Yet sometimes we have to ask ourselves, am I willing to take a chance to step into the unknown tomorrow in order to step out of the redundancy of today? Turning the page can be like crossing a threshold into a similar reality. Yet, by being willing to move forward, we have transformed. When we consider crossing the threshold, we might think of a rite of passage we make in our life. There are graduation, marriage, parenthood, career milestones, and for some of us, our first career failure, our first divorce, and maybe even our first night in jail. These are significant even if we arrive at them through age and experience because they define who we become as a person. I point this out to say that there are also the inner thresholds we cross. These are steps we make in consciousness, falling in love, identifying our calling, mystical experiences, epiphanies, and declarations. In stories, the thresholds being crossed are generally very clear. Harry Potter moves through a portal to Hogwarts, Alice steps through the door into Wonderland, and so on. In life, thresholds are not always visible. It is rare indeed that the line is something we can see, point out, or even hesitate behind. Unfortunately, if we don't see the line, we are often unclear about what would help us grow or offer insight into our future. How to turn the page in our life story is unclear. The good news? We don't have to cower behind the line. Generally, we don't realize we've crossed the threshold or turned the page until it's already taken place. It takes just as much courage and faith, yes, but not as much anticipation. In real life, turning the pages is less about forging ahead and more about letting go. It is more a result of our willingness than our willfulness that reveals what's next in our lives. Turning the pages certainly involves courage and willingness, but ultimately, it means no longer struggling against the currents of our own spirit and our own narrative trying to carry us onward. In Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, you remember the part where Alice has to fit through the door? There were doors all around the hall, but they were all locked, and when Alice had been all the way down one side and up the other, trying every door, she walked sadly down the middle, wondering how she was ever to get out again. Creating our own way seems to be an essential part of truly living life's adventure. Can you relate to this in your own life? Did you marry someone when most people disapproved? Did you take a job you weren't supposed to? When it comes to living a truly whole, worthwhile, and unique life, our role is not to bang down the locked doors. It is to create a space in which we can find an opening we haven't seen before. We must make our own key and make our own way. This is what Alice finds. Suddenly, she came upon a little three-legged table, all made of solid glass. There was nothing on it but a tiny golden key, and Alice's first idea was that this might belong to one of the doors of the hall. But alas, either the locks were too large, or the key was too small, but at any rate, it would not open any of them. However, on the second time round, she came upon a low curtain she had not noticed before, and behind it was a little door about 15 inches high. She tried the little golden key in the lock, and it fitted. She looks down and finds the smallest of openings, and her heart tells her, yes, that's my opening. But her head reminds her, you can't fit through this opening. Your body and her ego are too big. Our job in life is not to knock down doors. It is to seek those openings, however small they seem, and move towards and through them. These may show up as an opportunity in a relationship to say how we really feel, as a chance to say yes to being of service, as a book we are called to read, or as a question to ask. These are not big openings. They are small, and while we initially think our bodies and egos are too huge to risk trying to fit into them, we must think again. I have a friend who grew up in a small Midwestern town with 10 people in his high school class, so to say that he was the captain of the football team in valedictorian is only so impressive, but he'll still tell you that. He was exceptionally smart and won a scholarship to go to a state school, a great honor for his town. He had applied to other schools too, and when the acceptance letter to a large California university came, it was the smallest of openings that called to his heart. And he went for it. At 18, he said no to the path laid out for him, a full scholarship in his home state, and chose to pass through the small opening and move to California. There was no scholarship. It was a big, competitive university. He had his family's support, but in a small town, his decision was published in the local newspaper, and many looked down on him. Was he too good for his town and state? Was he abandoning his roots and traditions? Was their way of life not good enough for him? None of this was true. He was making his own way. And when we make our own way, we may feel unsupported and alone at first. That is the darkest point. But as we walk, we are slowly brought through the passageway into a new experience. For him, it was trust in his inner calling. Then his family, then scholarships and loans, and finally, a university community that would have thought him stupid to make any other decision. When we move with faith, the universe has a way of supporting us. This is what happens for Alice. A little bottle appears that says, "Drink me." Alice drinks it and becomes who she needs to be to fit through the door. One thing we underestimate about ourselves is that even when we step off the precipice, we can look back up and see ourselves still there. Boy, that sure was a long way down. We must continue in faith and trust, or we'll return back up to the edge of the precipice. This is what happens to Alice. Small as can be, she gets to the tiny door and realizes she forgot the key. "Come, there's no use in crying like that," said Alice to herself rather sharply. "I advise you to leave off this minute." Soon her eye fell on a little glass box that was lying under the table. She opened it and found in it a very small cake, on which the words "Eat me" were beautifully marked in currants. "Well, I'll eat it," said Alice, "and if it makes me grow larger, I can reach the key, and if it makes me grow smaller, I can creep under the door. So either way, I'll get into the garden, I don't care which happens." At first, the idea that we are supported by the universe sounds like magical thinking. But as you think about the support of people that have shown up, the people who came to you for support, and the opportunities in serendipitous moments, you eventually come to realize that the seemingly supernatural support you've received is maybe not so supernatural after all. It is the natural result. Moving towards those openings with trust and faith naturally calls forth the momentum and support to get through. I'm not saying there is no risk. I'm not saying failure is not a possibility. I'm saying that if you create a space in your consciousness where trust and faith can work unencumbered, you'll be amazed at what can come forth for you. You can know you are at a threshold when you are faced not only with two choices, but with two realities. One represents not only your past, but also your old way of thinking. Another may represent a new way of thinking, a new way of seeing yourself, a new reality. Of course, there may be areas of our life where we feel like failures, in a strange relationship, or something you wanted to become but didn't. It is important to remember what turning the page to a new model of thinking can do. It can allow for forgiveness, healing, and humility. I once counseled a woman who had issues with her father. She came to me because he was back in her life in a big way after a decade of not speaking. He was in his last days. Growing more and more elderly, he needed her help. Although she felt estranged from her father and unsupported by him for most of her life, she wanted to help him. So she took him in. The problem that she shared with me was, "I can't be near him for 3 minutes without becoming enraged. He doesn't have to say a word and I get furious." It was easy for both of us to see that this anger had to do with wanting support from her father and not getting it. In a way, she still wanted from him what she had not received in the past. Her anger came from the frustration and resentment. In order to care for her father, we decided to try the following. She would begin to see her father no longer as who she thought him to be, the dad who was never there for her, but as he really is, an elderly man who needed help. This meant doing something very important, releasing him from the role of father. For her overall health, she also needed to release her attachment to receiving support from someone who was not going to give it to her, in this case, Dad. To have that sense of someone being there for you if you get in trouble, of feeling someone is proud of you, my client was going to have to be willing to be receptive to life to bring forth these feelings for herself. Through this practice, my client realized that she had never had a successful relationship because of her attachment to a lack of being loved and supported in her life. She didn't feel supported in her studies, in her personal life, or in her spiritual life, especially by men. She had to ponder how much of this was because of another's behavior, and how much of this was about rejecting support because of my attachment to it from one particular source. Over the next year with her father, the resentment dissipated. In her own life, she was getting more and more bits of support. Her relationship with her father was the best it had ever been. In his last days, she shared with me that she even felt loved and seen by her father, which was an invaluable experience. Being stuck on a page in our lives is often a sign that forgiveness is called for. At its most basic, forgiveness means acknowledging the love in our past that we didn't get to express, either because of our own folly or because of someone else's, and being willing to express that love now. The easiest way to move on with our true story is to let a long-time story go, to stop telling it and start living it, to put down the burden. Many of us are familiar in some way with the myth of Atlas. Atlas betrays the Olympians, and his punishment from Zeus is to hold up the heavens, or the sky, to keep it from falling to earth. At one point, Atlas convinces Heracles to hold the skies for him, but is soon tricked into holding it up once again. The great question is this: what would happen if Atlas released his burden? One way to answer is to ask ourselves, what would happen if I put down my own burdens? Would we fail to meet our responsibilities? Would our world fall apart? Would they fall like tears from our eyes as we realized a way of life without them? Today, when we think of Atlas, we don't imagine him as the one holding back heaven from earth, but holding up the globe itself. In Ayn Rand's work, Atlas Shrugged, Francisco asked Hank what advice he would give to Atlas if he saw that the greater his effort, the harder the burden was to bear. The answer Francisco gives him is to shrug. Give up your burdens. By that, I don't mean to give up your responsibilities. These are two very different things. A responsibility is something we choose to do. A burden is something we choose to suffer because of. When we face the most difficult aspects of our lives, it is not wise to hold these alone. Give them to God is the spiritual advice. Practically speaking, this means release yourself from their weight and take care of yourself. Be good to yourself and others and see what happens. Because sometimes the best way to set the nature of life into motion is not to forge ahead, but to let go. Ramana Maharshi said, "Place your burden at the feet of the Lord of the universe, who accomplishes everything. Remain all the time steadfast in the heart, in the transcendental absolute. God knows the past, present, and future. He will determine the future for you and accomplish the work. What is to be done will be done at the proper time. Don't worry. Abide in the heart and surrender your acts to the divine." In more practical words, be with what is in your life with as little judgment as possible, and you may find there is something whole operating there. Perhaps if we release our grasp of the sky, it will not fall. Perhaps the only thing separating heaven and earth is ourselves. Get out of the way. There are two powerful things that can happen when we release the burden. The first is grace. Grace is when the veil of limitations has lifted and we experience the wholeness of what is. Grace is peace in the midst of seeming chaos, vigil in the face of tragedy, a light that flickers in the darkness. The second is forgiveness. When I choose no longer to possess hatred or anger or fear towards someone or sometime, forgiveness occurs. Grace and forgiveness are human experiences, but they are what we might call divine events. We don't do them. We let go so that they may happen, and we are better because of them. Ask yourself, where do I want grace in my life? Where do I want forgiveness in my life? What am I willing to let myself out from under for this to take place? Isn't it time we stop pretending that we are someone we are not? It is possible, perhaps, that who we are now is better, more entertaining, more intelligent, and more authentic than who we imagine ourselves to be. Living more of a true self and therefore creating a truer story, we must let go of the imaginary person we are not and have faith in who we really are. Some themes are realized. Some are hidden and revealed only in glimpses of potential. You know your spiritual narrative is realized when you identify with it more than with the singular circumstances in your life as something that has always been there and still is today. The mythologist Joseph Campbell famously invited us to give up the life we have planned in order to live the life that is waiting for us. This is nowhere truer than our relationships. It is also valid in all the other areas of our lives. Who we are supposed to become, the way the world ought to be, what we expect of our children, and so on. Our fantasies are not always visions to be actualized, but messages to be listened to and guides to be followed. An essential part of understanding our spiritual narrative is realizing that although our imaginations and dreams are connected with our spiritual narrative, they are our guiding star and not our destination. It is what comes forward by following it that matters. It is what we find along the way as we follow our dreams that is our true story. Do you believe your soul has a story? That beyond all the stories you tell yourself about what you're here for and what your life is about, a deeper story exists? Do you believe you have a soul story that, guiding and calling you, seeks opportunities to bring about the themes it wants? I believe my soul has a story. I call it my last story standing. It's the story of my soul that overall is seeking to express and experience, discover and become the qualities of the most sacred. My soul story is my story of learning what love is, what wisdom is, what truth is. When I get caught up in thinking that everyday dramas of my life are my truest stories, my conflict with so-and-so or my job at such-and-such, I can remember why I'm really here, to love, support, inspire, and be joyful. By bringing that into my awareness in my life, I can transcend the drama and be who I really am. When we are able to affirm our soul story, our spiritual reason for being, we have the realization of who we really are and why we are really here, and as a byproduct of that, our everyday stories work out better. There's a story about someone who was hurt so badly, they didn't know if they could truly love or allow themselves to feel love. There's a story about someone who didn't get the thing they wanted more than anything else in the world and who felt like giving up on the rest of everything. There's a story of one who felt they failed a member of their family and could never be forgiven. There's the story of the one who, filled with so much uncertainty, secretly hated herself. I don't know if they are true stories, but perhaps somewhere along your life, it's been your story. And what happened? Did things work out? I'll tell you that if they did so for two reasons. One, the grace of God. And two, you affirmed a greater story about yourself. You knew you were not at the end of that story. You knew that a greater truth of love or forgiveness or peace of mind or joyfulness could exist for you. Never give up on your soul's story. Remember, the more you affirm it and bring your awareness of it to all of the stories you tell yourself, the closer it comes to being an ever-present truth. Whatever may be the tensions and the stresses of a particular day, there is always lurking close at hand the trailing beauty of forgotten joy or unremembered peace. Howard Thurman.
You've been listening to Spiritual Narrative, written and narrated by Joshua Reeves. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Audiobook and music produced by Daniel Namot. Original paperback is available at Amazon.com.